Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Meeting to order. Please silence your cell phones. The time is 9:00. And today I'm joined by Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, and Senator Merrick. Senator Hoffman is out on state business. So, and I'd like to acknowledge that we have Senator Geisler in the room. We have one bill on the agenda today, that's Senate Bill 120 by the Senate Education Committee. Senate Bill 120, which is the Education Tax Credits Extension Bill, is by the Education Committee. This is its first hearing. The bill is going to be carried by Senator Jesse Keel on behalf of the Education Chairperson, Senator Tobin. I'm sorry, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Bjorkman, please come on up and identify yourself for the record. Go ahead with your presentation. Bring up whoever you need to bring up with and introduce them, so.
Thank you very much, Chair Olson, members of the esteemed Senate Finance Committee. It's a pleasure to be with all of you here today to present this bill, Senate Bill 120, Extend Education Tax Credits. This bill reinvigorates the successful Education Tax Credit Program through January 1st of 2031. The Education Tax Credit Program encourages businesses to strengthen their connection to Alaska's workforce development and educational institutions. The Education Tax Credit Program encourages businesses to target funding and resources toward opportunities that help grow essential skills and abilities and directly move our economy forward. Alaska's schools, colleges, and educational institutions have benefited from these charitable donations, both from the dollars and equipment that have been contributed. This equipment can range from lab equipment for experimentation to mechanical equipment, which our students can work on to gain a variety of skills and certifications. These tax credits can be used to offset a variety of taxes, including the corporate income tax, fisheries business tax, fisheries resource landing tax, insurance premium and title tax, the mining license tax, and oil and gas production taxes. Currently, for every dollar that the state foregoes under this tax credit, it leverages $2. In 2022, $2.32 million were claimed in tax credits. From these $2.32 million, $4.65 million were contributed to our educational opportunities in this state, with about $2.5 million going to our University of Alaska system. Senate Bill 120 would not only extend the Alaska Education Tax Credit Program, but also return the program to the credit provision in place before significant cuts were made in 2018. These changes include a return to the total amount of credits allowed to $5 million from the current $1 million. The amount of credits allowed would be set to 50% of contributions of not more than $100,000, 100% of the next $200,000, and 50% of contributions that exceed $300,000. Senate Bill 120 further extends the Education Tax Credit Program to nonprofit organizations that focus on academic achievement of students across the state. With me here is my incredible staffer, Mr. Ramey Matuszewski, and he will go through the sectional of the bill.
Mr. Matuszewski, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ramey Matuszewski, staff to Senator Bjorkman. To summarize the sectional analysis, sections 1, 4, 7, 10, 13, 16, and 19 amend the Alaska statutes that govern the insurance, income, oil or gas producer, property, mining business, and fisheries resource landing tax education credits by adding subsections stipulating that contributions subject to the education tax credit can be used for the operation of a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting statewide academic achievement, including for student scholarships in an interdisciplinary curriculum in the subject areas of economics, science, social science, literature, music, art, math, writing, speech, and interview skills. Section 1 further amends AS 21.96.070A to clarify that insurance tax education credits are allowed for contributions accepted by the entities identified in subsections 1 through 7. Sections 2, 5, 8, 11, 14, 17, and 20 amend the Alaska statutes that govern the insurance, income, oil or gas producer, property, mining business, and fisheries resource landing tax education credits to set the amount of the Alaska education tax credit at 50% of contributions up to $100,000, 100% of contributions from $100,001 through $300,000, and 50% of contributions that exceed $300,000. Currently, the insurance tax education credit is limited to 50% of contributions. Sections 3, 6, 9, 11, 15, 18, and 21 amend the Alaska statutes that govern the insurance, income, oil or gas producer, property, mining business, and fisheries resource landing tax education credits to stipulate that contributions claimed as a credit may not be used to claim credit elsewhere under this title and may not be combined with other credits to exceed a total of $5 million. The current cap is $1 million. If the taxpayer is a member of an affiliated group, the total amount of credits for the group may not exceed $5 million. Currently, the cap is $1 million. Section 22 provides for January 1st, 2031, for the expiration of the Education Tax Credit Program, and Section 23 sets the effective date for this act as January 1st, 2024.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee for either Mr. Matuszewski or Senator Bjorkman? One of the questions I do have is that I've heard a lot of good things about programs with VOTEC. What other type of contributions or what have they used the money for, like the university, for other areas of employment besides VOTEC?
I'm sure. Thank you for the question, Chair Olson. I'm sure that our invited testifiers will speak to that. But I think in fisheries businesses across the state, as well as mining, oil and gas, our healthcare industry, all of those industries have been beneficiary of the training and the equipment that training is done on through this tax regime. And we'll hear more about the benefits and what programs are able to be supported from our invited testifiers.
Give me an example of what kind of healthcare provision that has benefited the public in general by the healthcare delivery system.
Sure. I'm sure that our invited testifiers will speak more about that.
Now, if there's no further questions, we'll go ahead and go to Mike Williams, the Deputy Tax Director from the Department of Revenue, who will go over the fiscal note. Mr. Williams, are you on, sir?
Chair Olson and two members of the committee. I'm here to present the updated fiscal note for Senate Bill 120. I will skip to the back page just to reiterate some of the background that has already been given. But just for the record, again, my name is Michael Williams. I'm the Deputy Director for the Tax Division, Alaska Department of Revenue. The Education Tax Credit is a credit for qualifying contributions to Alaska universities and accredited nonprofit Alaska 2- and 4-year colleges for facilities, direct instruction, research, and educational support purposes, donations to a school, district, or state or regional operated technical and training school for vocational education purposes, programs, and facilities, and donations for Alaska Native cultural or heritage programs for public school staff and students, and a facility in the state that qualifies as a coastal ecosystem learning center under the Coastal American Partnership. The credit is available to be claimed against insurance premiums tax, title insurance premiums tax, corporate income tax, oil and gas production tax, oil and gas property tax, mining license tax, fisheries business tax, and fisheries resource landing tax. The credit for any one taxpayer cannot exceed $1 million annually across all tax types. The credit is currently scheduled to be repealed effective January 1, 2025. This bill reverts back to provisions of prior legislation, namely House Bill 278 in 2014, which expands the amount of the credit as a percentage of the contribution from 50% of all contributions to the following: 50% of contributions for the first 100,000, 100% of the next 200,000 of contributions, and 50% of the amount of contributions that exceed 300,000. This bill would also increase the credit limit from $1 million to $5 million annually per taxpayer. The new provisions would take retroactive effect to January 1, 2024, and the bill extends the sunset provisions to January 1, 2031. The revenue impact only include those eligible tax programs administered by the Department of Revenue. The bill's fiscal impacts can be divided into two categories. One is to increase the tax credit percentage or contribution and annual limit, and two, the extending of the credit repeal date. The revenue impact of the increase in the tax credit percentage of contribution and annual limit change is estimated by applying historical information when similar provisions and limits were allowed in statute. This analysis looked at information from years 2014 to 2019 in the table below. It's split between the two different provisions of the extension of credit. The revenue impact of the increase of the repeal date is estimated by using the average of the last 3 years of actual credits claimed as basis going forward. So roughly, for fiscal 25, it would be a $5 million impact, and then going forward for the next few years, it would be $6.6 million annually. And then the retroactive component is estimated to have a $1.7 million revenue impact. Implementation. This legislation would require the department to make minor changes to its tax revenue management system. Resources required to implement this bill would include staff time to update tax forms, trends, and revenue online, and other miscellaneous costs where applicable. These costs would be absorbed by the tax division using existing resources. And with that, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that concludes presentation of the fiscal note. And if there's any questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Williams? Mr. Williams, I do have a question. Is that when one of the corporations goes ahead and gives a contribution to the to a Votech school where they have a simulator for heavy equipment, who decides what that value is of that contribution?
Mr. Chairman, the statute currently adopts provisions of Internal Revenue Code Section 170. Which it's the Internal Revenue Code that deals with charitable contributions. So when there's contributions of equipment, we would follow the IRS regulations that require an appraisal of that equipment for valuation purposes of the donation.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Mr. Williams? Mr. Williams, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Thank you.
We'll go into invited testimony. We have up. This is Deantha Skabinski on online. Oh, I'm sorry. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name is Deantha Skabinski. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. AMA is a membership association that represents all aspects of Alaska's mining industry, from large hard rock and coal mines, mining exploration and development projects, small family placer mines, industrial gravel and rock, and the vendors and contractors that support our industry. Since established in 1987, the Education Tax Credit Program has successfully encouraged private sector investment in higher education in our state and helped many Alaskans learn the skills for jobs in mining and other industries. Alaska's large mines have welcomed the opportunity to partner with the state of Alaska and provide funding directly to Alaska's higher education programs that support workforce development and research that enhances efficiency and safety in Alaska's mining industry. Between 2011 and 2023, mining companies in Alaska used the Education Tax Credit Program to invest in nearly 20 different programs across educational systems. These include areas like five schools and programs underneath the UAF system, three within UAA, the UAS Pathways to Mining Program, Northwest Arctic School District, and others. There's a letter of support on the record from AMA and Alaska Metal Mines that details all of the institutions and programs the mining industry supports through this tax credit program to cultivate young Alaskans who will be the next generation of our miners. The high school vocational programs provide the educational opportunities within the high school and the training that directly leads to full-time jobs in the industry with high pay and excellent benefits. And this has become particularly valuable today as we grapple with the out-migration and the significant challenges with attrition and aging in our workforce. We strongly support a sustainable fiscal plan for Alaska that encourages private sector investment and economic growth, which includes innovative ideas like the Education Tax Credit Program that gives Alaskans the skills to succeed and opportunities to stay here in our state. So we urge you to pass SB 120, and I really appreciate the opportunity to testify before your committee today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Kabinski? Senator Bishop.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate you not forgetting us small miners in there when you included us in this mining license.
Ms. Kabinski, one of the questions I have is how many mining corporations or even small miners, like was referred to, how many, what percentage of those participate in this tax credit program?
Chair Olson, that's a great question. I don't know that I could give you a percentage. I think it is primarily the large operating mines because that's, you know, the credit comes in when you are large operations, but I'd be happy to get you a more detailed answer to that.
I was kind of getting an idea as to if there were many small miners that are involved with that, or the mom and pop miners that are out there picking, shoveling and those kind of things.
Chair Olson, I think they do things like support the Alaska Resource Education Program and certainly the schools and programs that are in their community.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from Ms. Kabinski, members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Next we have Stephanie Madsen. Ms. Madsen, are you on, ma'am?
Good morning, Chairman Olson and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Stephanie Mathen. I'm the Executive Director of the Asset Processors Association. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, I'm not home today, so I'm doing this telephonically, and so I'll stop and see if you're hearing me okay.
You're coming in loud and clear, Ms. Mathen.
Okay, very good. Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee, appreciate this opportunity to provide testimony. We are very supportive of the Education Tax Credit Program. Our members have contributed gifts since 2000. Generally, Mr. Chairman, we provided two endowments through this Education Tax Credit Program. The first one is funding the Ted Stevens Distinguished Professor of Marine Policy at the University of Alaska Fairbanks College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. And the second endowment sets up a research center also housed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks called the Pollock Conservation Cooperative Research Center. Additionally, the Ted Stevens professorship really is the basis of what the university is now doing, which is a great program on the Marine Affairs Program. So we're very, very excited about that. Mr. Chairman, over the years, we've probably contributed gifted about $16.8 million for marine research. We have funded 53 graduate and postdoc students. I think you're going to learn more about the specifics of the Pollock Conservation Research Center from other testimony. But I also wanted to share that additionally, we have provided gift funds that have gone to support students at Alaska Pacific University. And we've participated in two programs that support high school students. The first one is at the University of Alaska Southeast, and that's the Fish Tech program. That's a program, Mr. Chairman, that allows high school students getting familiar with fisheries around the state. They're high school students, but when they take this class, they get college credits. The other program that we've been very heavily involved in is the Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome. Mr. Chairman, I'm sure you're very familiar with that program. For others, that program brings students in from the outlying communities and provides exposure to them on fisheries, small equipment, driver's license, swimming. It's a broad program that we're happy to fund or support. I think that you're going to hear other testimony and that we'll really get to the value added. I think that you heard that for every dollar you get two back, but the value even goes beyond that, Mr. Chairman. We've been supporting students, as I've mentioned, and many of them have gone to work for ADF&G. We've supported research that benefits all fisheries, especially in this time of climate change and its impact. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there. Happy to answer questions again thank you very much for your time and your consideration, and we hope that you will support SB 120. Thank you.
Ms. Mattson, one of the questions I do have is that when you're funding graduate students as they're going to graduate school, are you just funding the tuition for them, or are there other financial help that you're giving to them as well?
Mr. Chairman, great question. So we really do fund graduate students in two different ways. One, when we are funding research projects, there is likely a graduate student involved in that research. So we fund the research, and that graduate student benefits from having that project. Additionally, we have in the past done graduate fellowships where we do pay for master's, it's a 2-year funding, and for doctorates, it's about a 3 or 4 year funding, and we provide them the stipends and the tuition. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Certainly sounds that, and having gone to graduate school, it's a lot of help to go ahead and have somebody on the outside kind of taking the edge off some of the expenses that are there. The other question that I have is there a help for students that go to out-of-state institutions? Or just
Mr. Chairman, I would, no. The way that our program works with the University of Alaska Fairbanks and APU, those are all in-state students. Now, I don't know where they originated from, but they're actually going to Alaska universities.
Okay. Any further questions for Ms. Mattson by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Next we have up is Katie Capozzi, Communications and Projects Manager for the Alaska Chamber of Commerce. Ms. Capozzi, are you on, ma'am?
I am, thank you. Co-Chair Olson, Stedman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Katie Capozzi, and I serve as the President and CEO of the Alaska Chamber. I testify today in support of Senate Bill 120 and Access to Immediate Education Tax Credit. The Alaska Chamber was founded in 1953. We just celebrated our 70th anniversary, and is Alaska's statewide business advocacy organization. Our mission is to promote a healthy business environment in Alaska. The Chamber has more than 700 members and represents businesses of all sizes and industries from across the state, representing 58,000 Alaskan workers and $4.6 billion in wages. By vote of our extremely diverse membership, the Alaska Chamber has a formal policy position to support education tax credits, otherwise known as ETC, and request that the ETC sunsets either be extended or repealed. As you have before you, the SB 21 would extend the ETC through 2031. Several chamber members from the fishing industries you just heard, the mining industries you just heard, to oil and gas, use and support the education tax credit system. Our members know firsthand how vital an educated and trained workforce is for their operations and for a sustained, healthy Alaskan economy. Extension of the ETC would encourage continued and long-term investment in our future workforce, which is so desperately needed right now. In closing, the Chamber supports SB 120 and encourages this passage of the straightforward and good for business bill. Thank you for considering the Alaska Chamber's comments.
Ms. Capozzi, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Are there any questions by members of the committee for the Chamber of Commerce or the Executive Director thereof? I see no questions. Thank you very much, Ms. Capozzi.
Thank you.
We'll call in at ease. Chad Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. Mr. Hutchinson, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson. I'm the State Director for Government Relations for the University of Alaska System. And online today for questions, if necessary, is Dr. Todd Burnett, who is the Director of the UA Foundation. Education tax credits, we heard from the previous testimony, very important to the university. There's no doubt about it. They're directed contributions that help with directive activities. A multi-year extension is encouraged, in this case with SB 120. And as we heard, there's charitable contributions that happen from all around the state. It helps strengthen our relationships with industry partners. They're directly related to workforce, academic, and research needs that benefits all of Alaska. In the picture you see right there, there's an example. This is a big check, literally, $1 million that Ken Ross gave to UAF for the Trothieta Indigenous Studies Center. Very pleased about that. So there's good partnerships all the way around. Doyon has been involved in that conversation, and we're very pleased about that. Here's just an historical overview of the tax credits the university has received over the years. And this, I wanted to include this because it gives you kind of some distinctions with some important timelines. In 2018, as many on this committee remember, there was a change in the education tax credits with regards to the phased approach, to the approach that we have now. You can see that there is kind of a cause and effect with regards to the contributions that the university receives. It is true that on the average, we received more pre-2018, and then post-2018, you can see that the numbers go down a little bit. And so that's just something for consideration that we want to make sure everyone's aware of, that the phased approach generally does seem to be more beneficial for the university when it comes to contributions, which is directly injected into workforce research and academics for the students. A few of our partners, as you can see, major contributors to the economy of Alaska on multiple fronts. We have aviation, we have oil and gas, mining, commercial fishing, banking. The Aurora Animal Clinic is on there, veterinary services, for example. On a medical sense, going back to Senator Olson's question from earlier, we did a brief review this morning, and just as that question was being asked, and we did not see contributors from the health industry per se, but we certainly orbit that conversation. And certainly, for example, if they wanted to donate a CAT scan, which like there's a CAT scan that exists under the biomedical lab at UAF, if that was donated by a health entity, they would, and that was for an educational purpose, which it certainly is at the university, used for multiple issues as far as study goes, then that would be something that would presumably qualify for the education tax credits because that's a piece of equipment that's used in an educational setting. So with that, it's a quick presentation. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mr. Hutchinson, as you go back to the CAT scan, where did you put the CAT scan?
Where do we put the CAT scan?
Yeah, I mean, do you have it in the classroom so that people can learn how to use it, or do you go and run it to a facility where they can actually see patients that are going to be going through the CAT scan?
Senator Olson, the answer is it's underneath the facility. The students use it. They use it for CAT scans with regards to hibernating animals. They're doing studies. University of Alaska Fairbanks is doing studies in cooperation with NASA when it comes to deep space travel and putting human beings into frozen states in order to move their bodies for space travel in the future. And for medical purposes, to put people in a state induced, it's a coma-like state in order to do a revival at some point in time in the future. So there's multiple studies going on. It is true right now those orbit around animals at this point, groundhogs. We do research on dogs, their brains, et cetera. So but certainly that's education purposes and the students use that.
Sure. The question I had was in 2018, you made a reference to on the chart there around that the amount of contributions had slipped down a bit. What was the reason for that?
Senator Olson, I you know, a couple things in 2018. The contribution limit went from $5 million to $1 million. I think that might have an effect. I think that the phased approach that was eliminated, that was the sweet spot for contributions, that $100,000 to $300,000 range, we found to be pretty beneficial for the university. When that went away, that had a change, that had an outcome. And so it is true, we do receive contributions still, but we do believe it's trending downward based on some of the changes that we saw post-2018.
I see. Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Mr. Hutchinson or the university system and how this tax credit extension would help them? One of the questions I do have, and maybe this is a question for Senator Bjorkman, but how did they come with the extension of time going to 2031? It seems like an odd year, which is 7 years from now, as opposed to 10 years or 5 years or something with a more easy number to forget, easy number to remember.
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question, Chair Olson. I think seven is a good number to take a look at a trend over time to evaluate how well this program is working, mm-hmm. and to put it up for that date. Like any sunset provision, it gives the legislature as well as the administration and the university system and other beneficiaries time to evaluate the program for its effectiveness and then take a look and see if adjustments need to be made. But I think 7 years is just about right.
Sure. Any further questions by members of the committee? Senator Stedman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There seems to be a little addition in the bill versus just a simple extension or a renewal of the old program. So can you help me with the inclusion, like on page 6 on line 7, where it gets into the operation of a nonprofit organization dedicated to, why that was included and what's the target there?
Senator Bjorkman.
Through the chair and a Senator Stedman, the person who crafted that language is a member of your committee, and I will let the good senator from Juneau answer that question.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The new provision there allows for funding of an additional statewide program. It was crafted around an existing program with a very, very broad curriculum that you can see all 10 academic disciplines that it has to be in there. I think there are some other things that exist out there in the world someone could start in Alaska. But today, that provision would cover the academic decathlon, which is a whole curriculum as well as a competition. It's done for high school students. And we worked to write that very, very tight so that it doesn't spread out all over to any number of things. But there are corporate taxpayers in Alaska who are interested in helping with the operation of that program and its expansion so that Alaskans in more places can participate. That's why you see that very tightly written reference to scholarships within this program, so that rural students can travel into the hubs for the statewide championships.
For the follow-up, Senator Stedman?
I'm still not very clear on what it is.
You would like to comment on that, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we actually have a testifier who's online and can give detailed explanations, but this is an existing statewide program, academics and competition for high school students. And it's very similar to other provisions that we have existing in our tax credit code here that were built for STEM competitions and robotics league, so that private sector interests can help fund those. Got to be run by nonprofits. Got to be available for high school kids statewide.
At ease. the Senate Committee, Senate Finance Committee back to order. Joan Pardis, are you on, ma'am?
I am.
Since you run the academic decathlon program, could you enlighten us with the answer to the question that was just there? And if you need us to repeat the question, we can go ahead and have that as well.
No, I heard the question. Thank you. Absolutely. And thank you all for your interest. So the Alaska Academic Decathlon is part of a national program. It was created in the early 70s in California. Almost all states compete. Here in Alaska, the program was run by GCI for decades. They created a nonprofit and they drew the support of the organization behind it. For many different reasons, 3 years ago, they decided to move the program to the Southeast Regional Resource Center, which is the place I work. CERC was created in 1976, is governed by a board of superintendents, and we provide school district services to just about every school district in the state. We don't have any dedicated funding. Each program must create its own income stream. As of Academic Decathlon, we have partnered with many programs. Alaska 529 gives us $40,000 in scholarships every year. Rural Cap Foundation, we partner with all of the three major campuses with the University of Alaska. We hold our state competition at UAA. We have broad representation from more than 20 different communities. Our high school state competition is next week on the UAA campus. I invite all of you to come and see it in action. We have heard repeatedly from funders that we go to, if we were part of the education tax credit, they would be more than glad to support this program. Right now, we're getting support at the $1,000, $5,000 level. And if we had a sponsor who, with the enticement of this education tax credit, to fund us in, you know, for perhaps more than a year at a time, it would be a much more stable environment for us to plan. And I do want to say one thing more before you ask questions. The Alaska Academic Decathlon involves students in three different categories. We have high achievers, we have middle achievers, and we have low achievers. And for a team to be vibrant and competitive, they must have three students from all these GPA levels. And our kids compete amongst themselves. And we have seen amazing strides. We are really capturing kids who are brilliant, who are not participating in school. We're also dealing with mental health crisis by providing small group engagement by educators. All our coaches are high school educators. We have lots of testimonials. But that's the broad strokes, and I'm more than glad to answer questions. But being included in this bill would be a game changer regarding funding and the sustainability of this program.
Senator Stedman, does that answer your question?
It helps clarify a little bit. I still question the need for it in the bill, but we'll proceed.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a concern that this language seems a little, could be interpreted broadly and may just need to be more narrow, because I'm just wondering how, out of the 7,000 nonprofits in the state, how many of them sort of fit this definition or could fit this definition of promoting statewide academic achievement. It just seems that's a little broad in terms. I'm just wondering if there's a way to narrow this down or to try to add some tightening language to this piece of that's in this bill.
Senator Wilson, is that a question for Ms. Pardes?
That's a question, I guess, for the sponsor or for Senator that may have made this amendment.
You have any takers, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to work with Senator Wilson on tightening language. The way it's written, an organization would have to do all 10 of those subjects. But I'm happy to, if he has language that, that will tighten it up a little more clearly, more than happy to do that.
Any comments, Senator Brockman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, tight's good, I agree. That would be fine, and if it pleases the will of the committee, I would support that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're just having questions on page 6, line 4. I'm just kind of wondering what that is. I think it was in the original bill, but the Coastal America Partnership established by the federal government. Don't know what that is.
Senator Bjorkman, can you clear us up on that?
We can get back to you on that.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Senator Stedman? Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Just to dovetail on Senator Stedman's question, in the fiscal note it says a facility in the state that qualifies as a coastal ecosystem learning center under the Coastal American Partnership. Is that the same thing? And if anybody can answer the question.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know the answer to that question specifically, but it would seem to be, and we can get back to you, but it would seem to be that the facility that would match that definition would be the Sea Life Center in Seward.
Sure. Okay.
But we'll get back to you.
Any follow-up or further questions related to that issue? If not, we'll go to Doug Walrath. Mr. Walrath, are you on, sir?
Yes. Good morning, Co-Chair Olson and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Doug Walrath. I'm the director of the Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome. Can you hear me all right?
Coming in loud and clear, sir.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I wanted to call in this morning to testify in support of Senate Bill 120, extending the sunset through 2031 and returning the program to the provisions that were in place prior to the 2018 legislative session. I would note, as Mr. Hutchinson did, on behalf of the university here at NACTEC, we have likewise noted that the contributions that we've received from education tax credit fund partners have dropped off here at NACTEC between FY20 and FY24. That represents 51% of what we had formerly received beginning in FY10 for our organization up through FY19, the last year that the former legislation from 2018 was in its form. So the education tax credit has provided the NACTEC program the opportunity to seek industry support, which has led to junior high career exploration program support, post-secondary transition programs across the state. And it's also allowed us to purchase advanced motion-based simulators, training equipment that engages students specifically in aviation and the maritime training sectors. We're able to put students under training which liability would otherwise prevent flight and open water training for our students, which are across the 15 villages of Bering Strait School District and here in Nome Public Schools. So the education tax credit continues to make a positive impact in Northwest Alaska. We found that junior high students who attend NACTEC career exploration programs continue on to our high school training programs at a rate 21% higher than their peers who don't attend those programs. And then likewise, 4 years later, we found, looking at data across the Bering Strait School District, that high school students that are attending NACTEC programs graduate at a rate 22% higher than the overall student population. So you've heard from some of our partners, and Ms. Madsen did a great job of providing an overview on NACTEC and what we all provide to save me a little time. So I'll just note in closing that when business and industry work hand in hand with education and training providers, it's a win-win for all partners. The education tax credit is a program that should be recognized as working for intended outcomes and one deserving of a sunset extension. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for coming out this morning, Mr. Walrath. Are there any questions for Mr. Walrath by members of the committee? If not, Mr. Walrath, I do have a question. One is that you talked about some of the students that were coming in from the local area from the Bering Strait School District. Are you getting some type of contribution from the local school district?
So NACTEC serves in that role for the two school districts, where both of them have elements that represent the infrastructure and what we have to provide training. So what the two school districts bring to us allows NACTEC to effectively operate with a lower overhead cost. So we couldn't do what we do without the support of both Bering Strait School District, Nome Public Schools, and the city of Nome as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Yes, sir.
Next up we have is Keith Criddle with the Pollock Conservation Cooperative. Mr. Criddle, are you on, sir? Oh, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Senators.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
My name is Keith Criddle. I'm the Ted Stevens Professor of Marine Policy at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm based here in Juneau at the Juneau Center for Fisheries and Ocean Science. Uh-huh. I want to just add to a little bit of the testimony that Stephanie Madison provided a little bit earlier today. By way of background, I've been with the University of Alaska Fairbanks now for coming on 27 years, 18 of those years here in Juneau as the Ted Stevens Professor of Marine Policy. I'm well compensated in my university position, but I'm also, in terms of state dollars, the cheapest faculty member in the whole system because my salary comes fully off of the earnings and dispensable earnings or the spendable earnings of the endowment, the Ted Stevens Distinguished Professor of Marine Policy Endowment. And earlier on, as that endowment was maturing, it came from direct contributions from the Pollock Conservation Cooperative to the university to support that position. The Pollock Conservation Cooperative has three major lines of thrust that tie in with the University of Alaska. There's the Pollock Conservation Cooperative Research Center, which has a focus on research and education. And to your question earlier, Mr. Chairman, Stephanie mentioned that a bulk of our research funding and the grants that we provide go to support graduate students. These are graduate students at University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska Anchorage, and the faculty members that are there, they're queuing up and keying the project and backfilling it. But most of the money goes to graduate student stipend and graduate student tuition. Sometimes it goes into materials, so we've got a project going right now that's putting pop-up satellite tags on Chinook salmon in the Bering Sea to learn about movements in that. Well, those run about $12,000 apiece for the tag. So, that's not graduate student support, but it's a graduate student project that's running that. Right. In addition, the Pollock Conservation Cooperative provided the support to create the Ted Stevens Professor of Marine Policy. In that role, I have responsibility for research activities and educational activities. The principal part of that educational activity has been building up a curriculum to support the creation of a graduate program in marine policy. That program was created in 2022 as a joint program between the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast. And it takes advantage of curriculum that's available through both universities and available statewide. And then the third contribution, it was a major contribution to the Pollock Conservation Cooperative of the University of Alaska, was support for the Ted Stevens papers. That was early on. Slight update on some of the figures that Stephanie provided earlier. We just got done 2 weeks ago awarding a new set of research grants. A portion of those were renewed or continuing funding for ongoing grants. And three new ones. So that was $350,000 in funding that just went out the door. That work is funding the new projects or funding a look at marine drivers of ichthyophonous infections in Yukon River salmon. It's looking at presence of microplastics in tissues of northern fur seals in the Pribilof Islands, an important subsistence resource. And it's taking a look at orca bycatch in the bottom trawl fishery. I'll point out all three of those new projects are topics quite different from Pollock. Right? We have a strong and broad interest in what is necessary and useful for the management of fisheries in Alaska. On average, we've supplied over the past 24 years, we've funded 408,000 in research projects each year. The bulk of our funding, as I said, supports graduate student stipends and tuition. 25% of our research funding has been for salmon projects, an area that we take very seriously and are very concerned with. Another $1.8 million of what we've provided, or about 17%, has been for marine mammal research. Our focus is on quality research needed to support management of fisheries in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Briefly, on the Marine Policy Program, this is my baby. I'm really excited about it. The university got behind it. It took a long time bringing it to term. We're in our second year. We've got 16 current students in that program, and four that are already enrolled in the program for starting in fall of 24. 78% of these students are Alaska residents. 91% of them are full-time professionals and part-time students. This includes seven ADF and G staff members, three U.S. Coast Guard officers, three working for other Alaska state agencies, and two working for tribes. And we've got a curriculum that is broad and diverse, that takes advantage of the strengths that we have, and is exciting to operate. So we get leverage out of the PCCRC in terms of that support for graduate student funding. We're taking advantage of the state funding on faculty members' research time for the faculty that are supervising those students. The program in supporting the Ted Stevens professor is providing a large portion of the curriculum that feeds into the new Master of Marine Policy program. And our students are coming from Alaska, they're going back into Alaska, and the Marine Policy program, the master's, is meeting our objectives. When we set out and looked for support for this program, we drew broad letters of support from the Commissioner of Fish and Game, the Regional Administrator for National Marine Fisheries Service, from the Coast Guard, from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, from environmental consulting firms in the state. We have broad draw-in and support because those supporters saw a need for homegrown, Alaska-based, trained expertise in policy issues. We've had a long history of producing fantastic biologists, and then they get promoted, and now they're doing policy. And so we now have the ability to put some of that polish on their program. The U.S. Coast Guard provides support for officers on a competitive basis to complete graduate degree programs. So they're fully funded to complete the degree program once they're selected through a competitive process. They support programs in maritime law, engineering, and marine policy and marine affairs. There are three programs in marine policy or marine affairs that the Coast Guard is currently recommending to officers interested: University of Rhode Island, University of Washington, and University of Alaska. And that is my testimony, Senators. Thank you.
We have a question from Senator Stedman.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you could, you know, it's all well and good your program, but to focus it on what this bill is actually going to impact. How has it impacted you in the past, and what's your expectations in the future? Is your entire program run off this tax credit bill?
Mr. Cradle.
Excellent question. So the Ted Stevens Professor of Marine Policy Endowment is fully funded, it's fully endowed. And so that will continue to generate funds as earnings off of that endowment that are sufficient to support the professorship. So that's got one locked in. The Pollock Conservation Cooperative Research Center has a small endowment and has provided most of its funds as annual contributions to the program that go to support annual spending. That was a decision made by the board and looking at sort of time to get return on investment. It takes a long time to build up an endowment, and then you get a small amount of earnings. So you get bigger bang for your buck spending money currently than putting it into an endowment and waiting for it to mature and generate earnings. On the other hand, once the annual contributions stop, then annual spending comes to a halt, whereas an endowment provides a recurring and ongoing continuous stream of funds. So we do have a portion of funds. The PCCRC endowment is providing about $70,000 or $80,000 per year in earnings that go towards our spending, along with the annual contributions. The Marine Policy Program has the Ted Stevens Professor as a faculty member tied to that. The program is led by the UAF College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences and the University of Alaska Southeast School of Arts and Sciences. So those are the two co-leads on the program. University of Alaska Fairbanks and UAS both received one-time funding from UA President Pat Pitney to launch searches to hire a faculty member in each of those programs. UAF is nearing the completion of its search. It has identified a strong candidate and looks to move forward with funding that position. University of Southeast, Alaska Southeast, is still in the earlier stages of its search process. But there's a good chance by the end of summer that we'll have a second faculty member at UAF in Marine Policy and a faculty member at University of Alaska Southeast in Marine Policy, probably focused on mariculture policy.
Follow-up, Senator Stibbe.
Well, I'm just looking, Mr. Chairman, at the cost, roughly $6.6 million. I'm trying to figure out what's the marginal financial impact to your program, not the justification of the existence of your program, but how much increased cash flow are you expecting, and what is, over the last few years, what cash flow have you collected from the education tax credit program?
Mr. Crittle.
I don't have access to those financials. I'm a faculty member. I don't see any budgets and aspects of that. I know on my Marine Policy program what it's generating in terms of enrollment, and I can back out of that what tuition is likely to be, although, again, I don't know the details because you've got Coast Guard officers that have got military grade and tuition. You've got some folks that are in the program that are University of Alaska employees, and so they've got some tuition relief. So I don't know, you know, in detail on that. But we're looking at, you know, in the Marine Policy Program, a steady stream of 15 to 20 students per year that we expect to see graduating through that program beginning in this upcoming year.
Sure.
And you're looking at 30 credits to complete that program. It's a course-only program. So it's one of the few that is defined as a master's program, 30 credits. With our master's of science programs, it's 30 credits plus however many more it takes to get through your thesis and get that wrapped up. So, you know, we can work from the tuition per credit hour at the graduate level and, you know, 15 students per year at 30 credits per degree to get sort of the contribution from that. In the overall educational tax credit program, I have really no idea on it. With the Pollock Conservation Cooperative Research Center, Stephanie mentioned support for 53 graduate students. We're at 59 with my 2024 update on that.
One of the questions I do have is that how many recipients are there for the Distinguished Professor of Marine Policy?
I am the inaugural, but I won't be the last.
We have a question by Senator Bishop.
He answered it.
Oh, okay. Any further questions from Mr. Criddle, members of the committee?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out this morning. We have Dr. Todd Burnett on board, who's the president of the University of Alaska Foundation. It has you on just for questions only. Did you have any comments you want to make, Dr. Burnett?
Yes, good morning, Chair and Committee. Yes, I'm just here for if there's any questions regarding the University of Alaska Foundation. Chad Hutchison, of course, did a great job of talking about the University of Alaska system and how the education tax credit and private support greatly support our programs, our students, and other put it in implementing our mission at our three universities across the state. So, again, I am available here. My area is the University of Alaska Foundation, where all the private contributions provided and donated to the universities come through our foundation.
Mr. Burnett, how can you give us a size of the annual amount that you have donated toward the foundation?
In total?
Yes.
Not under the tax credit?
Yes.
We raise roughly and have contributions anywhere from roughly around $15-20 million a year to about $30 million a year. I should also note we also give out and distribute from our endowments and the donations roughly about that same amount every year.
And does any of that amount go into an endowment as well?
Yes, we have the $20 to $30 million is both contributions to endowments, starting endowments, as well as funds, one-time funds, and various funds for current use.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Burnett by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for being available for questions.
Thank you very much.
We'd like to open it up to public testimonies. Anybody else in the room that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? Go ahead and come on up to the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Senator Olson, committee. Thank you for having me here today. I'm in support of the bill 120.
Excuse me.
My name is Tim Doherty. I'm a longtime educator here in the state. I'm a former vocational ed teacher I am better at lesson planning than I am talking to a group of people like you. So anyway, actually it's quite an honor to be sitting next to this young man right here, and I call him a young man because he's someone that we have worked together at times. I can go into the history of voc ed for our state and how that's all gone about. We don't need to do that, but we're running into an interesting phenomenon in our state. Voc ed is dead. I have to say that. When we ramrodded as educators this no child gets ahead or stays behind or whatever that law was, I was a voc ed teacher at the middle school in Homer, and I was standing at the back door over Christmas not letting them take the tools out of the wood shop, because they were putting a place, they're going to put a computer lab in where I was, had run a shop for 8 or 10 years, okay? And we closed them all. I was a principal on the North Slope, and we had the most beautiful wood shop that I had ever seen. And I, as a principal, could not schedule students in a rural community into that because I had to teach them what many people are calling the 3 R's or the 3 W's, whatever that is. Those kids needed that shop open, and we failed them, okay? Sorry if I'm kind of shaky because I'm very passionate about this. The big talk around the state is the BSA, and I get it. I understand it. As a school board member, I understand, and we're here to fight about that. But CTE, we have to find another way to help fund CTE that takes it out of the BSA. I don't really care. We need CTE. We had a tremendous program here. It was called Skills USA, and we would bring people from all over the state to participate in vocational ed competitions. We finally are starting that again after a 7 to 8 year hiatus. And let's hope that works. this is an opportunity in this particular bill that this young man has crafted to turn the tide. The smaller the school, the bigger the impact is on voc-ed. It's how the BSA is designed, and we have not really kept up with that. Seldovia. If you ever get to Seldovia, go into the school and look at that facility that sits empty. Empty. I'd love to volunteer there and develop a voc-ed class or a program there if I could. Okay. The priority of the KPBSD is to develop more CTE programs in our district, obviously. It's an unfunded mandate. It's something I don't think that we can do right now. And our other priority is develop community relationships. This is an opportunity for our voc-ed teachers, our school administrators, and our district people to go out and pursue relationships with the private industry. This is a win-win for all three. Finally, in closing, and I could go on and on, I have to give two personal anecdotes. I'm an educator, and I made sure that my son went to UAF and got his biology degree. And he did that. And the day he graduated, he looked at me and said, now what do? I did what I needed to do. He's working construction, making tremendous money in Oregon right now as a trained wildlife biologist here in our state. And the last one happened to me in my travels around here. I walked into an establishment the other night. A teacher came running, or a young student came running across the room and said, Mr. Doherty, is that you? And I said, yeah, it is. And she said, gave me a big hug, and we started to talk. She was a UA scholar. She's already got a degree. She's back here getting money to go back to get a second degree. And I asked her, I said, well, what was the biggest thing that you remember about your schooling at Homer? And her final comment was, she said, you taught me how to operate a tape measure and showed me how to run a chop saw. That are real life skills that we need to have every student that leaves our schools. And if at all possible, please help us fund the CTE part of our schooling, which is something that's sorely missed. Thank you very much.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Doherty by members of the committee?
Appreciate your time.
Certainly some compelling information and insights that you have there. Thank you very much for coming out this morning. Anybody else online or in the room that wants to go ahead and testify? Please come on up and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Annalia Karen. I am the College and Career Readiness Coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. So I currently wear multiple hats. I get to run our CTE programs. So I am the coordinator for all of our career and technical education programs on the Kenai Peninsula. And I also manage our middle college program. So we have students who are dual credit students taking classes through a variety of our university systems. And I just wanted to share with you the impact of this bill. Several other people who have testified mentioned programs that they offer throughout the state, and our students have been the benefactors of that. We've been able to utilize the mining and petroleum services program to have 25 students last year get mining training at the high school level. So 16 through 18 year old students who are earning industry credentials and earning college credits before they graduate from high school. And so they're able to get a jump start at getting into industry in the state of Alaska as a result of the financial contributions from industry partners and through the partnerships with our universities. And so that's really exciting. At Avtech, they have the Young Mariners program. Students each semester are able to earn credit through Avtech, and they learn skills like knot tying and how to read a nautical chart, how to use a nautical slide rule, which if you've ever looked at that lovely spinning round device, It's like Greek to me, but these kids are learning that skill so that they can go and eventually earn their captain's license and either be in the commercial fishing industry or run a private boat in our communities. And so that partnership between post-secondary and secondary education is really important. And as I read through this bill, it makes me excited. And it also, I think, was a missed opportunity to really push that partnership, not just at the post-secondary level, but also at that secondary level, and make awareness that those partnerships are working, and also that our industry partners can benefit by partnering with secondary education. There's a lot of barriers in that 16 to 18-year-old age group. So much of our apprenticeship program, students have to be 18 to participate. The apprenticeships that exist in the state of Alaska currently, most of them, students have to go to Anchorage to participate in, and there's not housing available. So our students are missing out on opportunities from our rural communities to jump into the electrical field or into the pipe welding apprenticeships, because there's not a foundational setup available for them to come into town and participate in that apprenticeship and then go back to their communities. And so I think that this bill is a great start. I think that it's an opportunity for us to have a larger conversation and look at how we can get those partners into our school buildings or our students into industry and open that up. So I appreciate all of the work that you're doing, and I'm excited at the direction that we're going. Mr. Doherty also mentioned Skills USA. I think that there's a huge impact that our CTSOs, which is our career and technical service organizations, can have. Skills USA is one organization in the state. We actually have five. HOSA is the health services organization that's available in the state. FFA is the Future Farmers Association. We also have Ed Rising, which is the educators CTSO, and FCCLA, which is the Future Community Partners. It used to be FHA, or Future Homemakers, and they've made a big push to make that more to all service organizations. And so those organizations are all on the ground floor, starting that operation of building students up, creating those opportunities for them to get skills training and also leadership training within the state. And so you can look for more from that coming as we move forward. Thank you for the opportunity.
Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Karen? One of the questions I do have is, as you look at the students that are coming off the peninsula that they're interested in some type of vocational education, are those numbers increasing or decreasing or staying the same?
I think we're seeing a significant increase. One of the things that I'm seeing with students I work with directly is there is a huge risk adverse or financial adverse group of students. They don't want to take out student loans. They do not want to have debt coming out of college. There's been a national push to make the awareness of the huge cost of education. Mm-hmm. And so students are looking for that opportunity to participate in our middle college. Our middle college is 3 years old. We started with 30 students and we now have 130. And those students are taking college classes in high school. I have four this semester that will graduate with associate's degrees along with their high school diploma. So they're saving a significant amount of tuition by participating in that program and being able to go to college with 2 years under their belt already. And the same in the CTE realm. We have students who, I had a kid that took welding classes last semester, graduated early, and he already has a full-time slope job making $90,000 a year. Why would he go to college and do something else when he's successful and he's going to make good money in a career field that is exciting and that's continuing to grow in Alaska? And so kids are making those decisions to stay home, to use their local community colleges, and to use those training programs.
Those are impressive numbers that you have there. With that, any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Karen? Thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room or online that wants to go ahead and participate in public testimony? If not, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside. This concludes our agenda for today. Tomorrow morning, our hearing is at 9:30. We'll have a half hour later than usual. The hearing hearing. We'll be hearing Senate Bill 91, Telehealth, the Multidisciplinary Care Team by Senator Klayman. With that, if there's no further business to come before the committee, we're adjourned at 10:20 a.m.